Sometimes having you and I put ourselves through some things that were just too heavy for us. You know? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. That's what takes the pressure off of it right there. Decision. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. But before that, look at the heavy stuff I put on me, the braces. Oh, I remember some heavy stuff I put on me. I was going to stay sober one time during Lent. I did. I stayed sober for 40 days. I really and truly did. Before Lent was over, I hated the Pope, the Bishop, the nuns, and all altar boys. That was some heavy stuff. You know? That was too heavy for me. Like them kids with them braces. I couldn't do that. Come, Lent was over, I think, then around 12 o'clock. And by 12 o'clock, I had a, what you call a can opener, draw it back on a beer can like I was going to stab it to death, you know? Wilfulness. But you see, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it. Look at this child. He went to any lengths. Any lengths means to me, regardless of what anybody else might say, and people can say some pretty tough things to you at times. You know, that's why you need a sponsor. It's kind of a buffer for you. You know, one of those kind of things that people, when they begin to make these remarks, when you're trying so hard to stay sober and somebody's going to come along, you know, after you get older in the program, it don't bother you too much when somebody walks up to me and says to me, well, so you don't drink. I said, not when I'm sober. Never drink when I'm sober. Well, why don't you drink? I said, well, it interferes with my sobriety. They think you got kidney trouble, and they just stop talking, you know, and those kind of things, you know. So. But the beautiful thing about it, this willingness to go to any length, this privilege of making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, to me, my friends, this is a freedom step. The will of God to me is God's playpen. If you have a youngster and you place him or her in a playpen, you're not going to put anything in there to hurt him. You're not going to put the scissors in the playpen. You're not going to put a saw or a fork in there to hurt him. You're going to put everything in there for him to make him comfortable. You know? And sometimes he'll be a rather belligerent. He's going to jump up and down and want to crawl over the thing like you and I do. You know, we want to get out of God's playpen. You know, so we can hurt ourselves. See? Oh, yeah. Sometimes, you know, when with the will of God, I want out of this playpen. Lord, please let me bump my head up against something. Yeah. Yeah. Not satisfied. Yeah. Without it, you know. Because we are afraid. Isn't this so strange that you and I are afraid of what people will say about us? Afraid that people won't accept us. Afraid that people will reject us. But we're not afraid to defy the will of God, are we? Isn't that something? We got to like other people that you don't like. Yeah. And if they say to you, well, you know, I don't like so-and-so. Oh, I don't like him either. Yeah. Say, well, I like him all right. I don't know. He ain't done nothing to me. Well, if you're going to like so-and-so, I'm not going to like you. I don't give a damn whether you do or not. You know, one of those kind of things. But do you know, my friends, I too was a very belligerent child. And I can be belligerent today because my life is still unmanageable. But I have sense enough now to know it. There are many times now I do not want to stay in God's playpen. There are many times that I want to crawl out of there knowing I'm going to get hurt. Knowing that. So won't you ever learn, Holly? Made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Do you understand this? Willingness. The importance of this willingness. This willingness that takes the pressure off me. And do you know what a beautiful thing about it? I don't have to be a people pleaser no more. You know, it says, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Not Charles, not Mary, not Jack, nobody. You know? The honey, you know one thing? The will of God and a Social Security check will carry you anywhere you want to go. I'm telling you, you got it made. Well, you know, the will of God, the freedom to meet my daily task. unafraid to meet anything that I have to meet. You say, you don't have any fears no more? No, not too many. Yeah. Everybody has some fear, but it's a healthy fear. Yeah, I have fear of that first drink. See? But the main thing about it is I don't have to fear that too much because I don't want it anymore. Yeah. Anything I got to get drunk to do, I can do it much better sober and remember where I did it. Now, wait a minute. Get your mind straight there. I ain't talking about what you're talking about one way or the other, see? But the will of God, God's playpen, keeps me from getting hurt. And then this youngster, he had to use the muscle of integrity, utter sincerity. He had to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of himself. Because naturally, he had to say to himself, he had to look at himself. He had to look at... See, alcohol exposes, at least it did in me, maybe it didn't in you, exposes a meanness in a human being. There has to be, for me, a certain disrobing. Do you remember the first two people? I'm sure you heard the story and you went to Sunday school or somebody told it to you. Of Adam and Eve, you know. When they threw their disobedience, and me just like them, through disobedience, we found ourselves naked. Because alcohol will see that you are naked, you know. Not only mentally, but physically, spiritually, and financially, and everything. But, you know, what's the first thing that Adam and Eve did when, after through their disobedience, they found that they were naked and they began to make a garment out of fig leaves? And I like to think in my mind's eye, the first fig leaf that they put on this garment was one of pride. You know? The second fig leaf must have been one of fear. You know? And on down the line, and the next was the fig leaf of resentment. How dare you tell me I can't do this? I hate you, I resent you for this. And then another fig leaf of self-pity. Oh God, I feel so sorry for myself. And on down the line. And finally, there had to be that disrobing. And I'm sure this youngster, when he looked at himself, might have had these same feelings, this crippled youngster that I know that I certainly entertained. And I had to, shall we say, disrobe. If you'll notice, when you read that story, or you hear that story, it says naked. It doesn't say nude, it says naked. What are we talking about? When a person is nude, it means he has on no clothes. That's what Webster says. When he is naked, it means he is defenseless. And brother, that's what alcohol left me. It's defenseless. I had no defense. You know? And hence it took a disrobing. You know? The first thing that had to come off was that pride. The very first thing. Yeah. And then all of those fears. And that resentment. See? And that self-pity. Yeah. And you know, there's a leaf, two leaves that we don't talk too much about in AA. But brother, these are two hellish leaves, and one is spite, and the other is jealousy. Honey, them are, they are, those are two bastardly leaves. You know? Spite and jealousy. You know? We don't want to talk about them, though, do we? See? And you know what? When we put on those leaves, you know what? And what we call it? After we put it on. Well, you know, after all, I'm not being spiteful, and I certainly am not being, I don't want to be jealous of a person. It's just a matter of fact that I really and truly feel that I should be the one to help this person understand themselves. That a bitch. You don't understand yourself, you're going to help somebody else. You know? Mm-hmm. Many times, I'm sure it must have been a hurting thing as it was for me. And inventory is hurting. But there can be no recovery without pain. At least I haven't found it. Most of the times we would withdraw from inventory. We don't want to be disturbed. Well, no, you know, after all, I'm sober, and that's enough. So I don't see where I need to take a searching and fearless moral inventory because I'm already sober. And you know, if I take an inventory, that will disturb me. Now, if you get a splinter in your finger, you know, what are you going to do? I don't care how much you put on it and massage it and band-aid on it and all that kind of stuff. If that splinter is still in there, that booger going to hurt. You know? See? Oh, yeah. So what have I got to do? I've got to let it hurt real bad one time and get that splinter out of there. You know? Let's get that hurt. Let's get with it. But many times we don't want... You see, pain, I know, causes the... Or disturbance, rather, causes pain, but pain certainly causes growth. And unless I had been disturbed, like this youngster that was in that wheelchair, he became disturbed. I couldn't have grown. I couldn't have went out to look for anything or to seek anything at all. We realize that, at least I did, and all this inventory. You know, the group that I came in a long time ago, we'd talk about writing an inventory, and them good old gals that came in that were my sponsors said, well, we're going to talk about it first. Let's talk it out. And that was something else. You know, we'd stay on the inventory for 6 months, and they'd go over character defects that you never even heard of before, you know? Yeah. But it worked. And then, you know, he had to use the muscle of courage. Admitted to God ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Courage. Now, I'm sure that this courage, it took courage each and every day to go down there. It took courage for this youngster in this wheelchair to look at these little puny legs of his. It took courage to try to stand up and do something about it. You know, it takes courage to lay it all out in open and look at it, and to say, how could I have? How could this have happened to me? You know, I read one time that in England, after the war, after extensive or intensive, whichever you want to call it, bombing, that very strange vegetation grew up. Vegetation that had not been known to be there for couple thousand years. But due to this intensive bombing, this had disturbed the earth in such way that it had caused the vegetation to grow again. And sometimes, you know, when I say to myself, how could I have allowed this to happen to me? This strange vegetation. So, Holly, after you, what you went through and what you were going through with, anything could have come out. And most of the times that it did, you know. I'm sure that this youngster, as he sat in his wheelchair, he must have thought to himself as he was trying, you know, how many times that he used his illness, you know, to get attention. You know, how many times didn't we use, or didn't I rather, use my illness? See, the sickest mind on earth is one that's sick and knows he's sick and capitalizes on being sick. That's a damn sick mind, you know that? It really is, you know. And sometimes, you know, we enjoy our illness, making other people miserable. Yeah, use it to make other people miserable. How do I enjoy my illness because I am so miserable myself that I must make you miserable too? Or, you know, sometimes when we look at that fifth step, we're admitted to God, ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, and say, well, I don't need to take that fifth step. You know, you think, well, I haven't committed any murder, and I haven't raped anybody. I haven't did this, I haven't did that. Just look at those little things. You know, as the book of books says, beware of the little foxes that gnaw at your vineyards because your vines have tender grapes. And my grapes are so tender that they would ferment at the slightest provocation. You know? You know? You know? Let's see. So, you know, sometimes when I look at the fifth step, I look at these other things, not of what I stole or this or that, but let me also look at those little things that I think, well, this isn't necessary. The exact nature of my wrongs. The exact nature of many of my wrongs was I wanted to make other people miserable because I was miserable. There was many times I wanted, shall we say, to run a guilt game on you because I felt guilty. And because I felt so guilty, I had to make you feel guilty too. And then if I could make you feel guilty, I wouldn't have to look at my guilt. You know? Exact nature of my wrongs. You see, you know one thing? When it comes down to the fourth and fifth step, I could have wrote just one word down. Phony. That would have covered all of it. That would have covered the whole thing. But I look at those little things. Those little bitty things. I look at that little word that I just talked about before, exact nature of my wrongs. Why did you want to spite people? Why? Because I felt insecure. And I wanted you to feel insecure. You know, too. And then again, I wanted to put fear into you so I could obligate you to me. You ever want to put fear into somebody and make them feel like, so that make them feel that you are the only person that they got, that you got to depend on me? You ever do that to people? You know? You don't want anybody to do that to you, though, do you? So you put fear in. If somebody tells you one little bitty thing about them, you're going to exaggerate it. You don't like that. Because you want them to be afraid so that you will think, so that they will think, you know, you're the only person that I got left to turn to. And you're going to show your behind the minute they have to turn to you. You know? That's it. But we love to run guilt games on people. You know, we always think about not paying bills. Sure, you're supposed to pay bills. Sure, I've got other things, exact nature of my wrongs. I've got to look at them little character defects, too. I got to look at how I tried to make people feel inferior. I had a superior way of showing my inferiority. You know, I like to make people feel guilty. I like to make people be miserable. I like to make people feel that they had nobody else in the world but me. And wouldn't it have been a duck if they didn't have anybody else in the world but me? But you know, all of those little things, just like sticking pins in them, you know, we kind of rejoice in those kind of things. And it took courage for me to look at what a stinker that I had been. Yeah? That takes a lot of courage to lay it out in the open and to say, you know, I used to run that game on you because I wanted you to be obligated to me. You know, I used to run that game on you of trying to make you feel guilty because I felt so damn guilty all the time myself. Then he had to use the muscle of self-respect. There it is. Entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. You know. You know, when a person is trying to regain or gain his or her self-respect, he doesn't even now want to get caught in a lie. No self-respecting person wants to get caught in a lie. You know. So when we look at this sixth step, where we're entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character, then we begin to use that muscle of self-respect. I want people to respect me, but I cannot. People will not respect me until I learn to respect myself. And I have to look again at the little things. Again, beware of the little foxes that gnaw at our vineyard. The little things, you know. Well, you say these character defects, you know, you pick out some word that long or something like, all I got to look at these other little small ones every once in a while. Person doesn't have any self-respect for people that beg all the time and people that are conning all the time and using other people. You know, have you ever been around people, you know? You might have done it yourself. You know, at least I did. Self-respect. Now, if you ever been around anybody and you're scared to open your pocketbook, now, you wasn't talking about money. You'd be talking about the snow, the rain, or anything else. And the minute you open your wallet and he sees more than $2, he's got to have three of them. You ever seen? He's got. Have you ever been around that type of person? You're talking about self-respect now. He can have a cigarette in his mouth and he's bumming you for one. He always just left his in the car or in his room. Bumming, begging, and mooching, all of those little things. Those are people, those are things, you know, my friends, that causes one's self-respect to deteriorate, you know. Sure, I'm very sure that this youngster, while he was in his wheelchair and while he was sick, many times people cleaned up for him and cleaned up after him and behind him. But when he began to recover, he didn't want anybody cleaning up for him. He didn't want anybody lying for him. He wanted to stand on his own feet as soon as he could walk on. As soon as he could stand up, he wanted to be able to stand on. And this is the beginning of self-respect. I don't want anybody calling up my boss or anybody else telling them that a lie for me. If there's any lying to be done, I can do it myself. You know? But I don't find that it's even necessary anymore. You know? I don't find that that's necessary. The first thing, again, responsibility, is the beginning also, not only of sanity, but of self-respect. You know? Where I can feel so inferior that I have to go around begging for compliments. You know, it's like you see a person plays the piano real nice, you know, and you say to him, "My, you play nicely," instead of him or her saying, "Well, thank you." "Oh, you really think I can play?" "No, do you think so?" "Tell him, oh, hell no, I just said that. I don't think you can play at all, you know." And then this youngster, he had to begin to use the muscle of patience. And that is one heck of a muscle. And that is one muscle that today, I must exercise all of them, but that one harder and harder. That muscle of patience. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. You know, there are many times that I'm sure that this youngster might have felt, why is it I'm not getting well? And why is it that everybody seems to be recovering or on the road to recover and I'm not doing any better than what I'm doing? And how very impatient that we can become. And I know how very impatient that I became, you know. I know how this child must have felt going day after day, day after day, and seems like that there was nothing really happening. I can identify with this so well. Why do I still think this way? Why do I still feel this way? Well, you still had that drinking thinking, Molly. That's why you felt that way, you know. That's why. You hadn't changed your thinking. And that takes patience, patience, patience. You know how sometimes we can get so mad and we'll say, well, you know, people aren't really helping me either. Well, you're not asking them for help either. You're telling them what you don't want or what you do want. Then we get mad at God and say, well, you know, I don't believe there's no God anyway. And then you turn around and say, well, God, I was just kidding. I didn't mean that, you know. You know. Well, I asked God for such and such a thing. I didn't get it. Well, yes, you got an answer. You got the divine snub. He said, you ain't ready yet. You know, one thing. Oh, and then sometimes we can get so angry because things aren't happening the way that we want them to happen, you know. And you say, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with me anyway. I don't think there's nothing wrong with me. You know, and then furthermore, all them people over in AA, they're just a bunch of phonies. There's nothing wrong with them. If they had my problems, it would be different. Courage. Patience. It takes courage. And it takes patience, patience. Just simply because everything doesn't fall in place right away. And then, again, when my patience begins to ebb, I start comparing, you know. And then I get mad all over again. I don't believe I'm no alcoholic. I don't see how I got railroaded into this mess anyway. You know. Because right away I've forgotten how badly I used to hurt. You know? And then he had to use the muscles of amends. That's the eighth and ninth step there. Sure, I'm sure that being a sick child and a crippled child for as long as he had been, that he had done a lot of things to hurt people. Yeah. And he had to make a list of all the people that he'd hurt and begin to make amends to them all. But the first amend that he had to make was to himself, to stop abusing himself. And one of the hardest things that it is for a person like me to do is to forgive myself, you know. To forgive myself and to like myself. And again, assume responsibility. You know, sometimes we think after we got sober, we become a celebrity and you're not supposed to work. Yeah. That, in other words, that now that you're sober, you're a celebrity and all you got to do is sit somewhere, you know, and become head honcho and just answer questions, you know. People will come to you every day and say, Allah, Allah, so and so, sober. You know. So we become set apart. You better watch that before you fall apart, too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-mm. You see, what I must do, you say, well, I don't know how to go about making amends. Well, you see, I must seek people that have the same problem that I have. Because it is a known thing. Human contact changes human conduct. When I begin to get in contact with other human beings that have the same problem, that changes my conduct. There are some times, and again, where human contact changes human conduct. When I thought, well, you know, there's no need for me going to try and straighten this out with nobody because they're not going to believe me anyway. Yeah. But maybe I might be approaching them a little bit differently than what I used to say. Maybe you've taught me how to approach them a little bit differently. You know, there was a time you figured, well, you know, I don't need to make any amends. You know, just go on back like nothing never happened. You know, you're used to walking on in, walking all over people. So go on back like nothing ever happened, but it isn't like that. It's not like that at all. But it doesn't mean that I become a whipping boy either. Because remember, once I become a whipping boy, I just lost the flexibility of one of my muscles, the one of self-respect. And I mustn't lose that, you know. So when it comes down to using the muscles of a man, I must first see that mine are strong enough that just in case that there is rejection, that I don't have to crawl. You know, it's a strange thing how some of us feel that we've got to crawl when you're making amends. And isn't it strange how sometimes people think you should crawl? You know, you can read all 66 books of the Bible plus the big book, and you will see nowhere in there where anybody tells anybody to crawl. God never told anybody to crawl. And here come along some caterpillar and tell you to crawl. You see, dignity wears the cloak of humility, and humility wears the cloak of dignity. You cannot don one without the other. And God's children don't crawl. Then he had to use the muscle of preservation. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Continue. In order to preserve, when one has something that is good, he must continue to do what he's doing. So he had to continue to exercise all of those muscles. He didn't look over there at that wheelchair once he got up and said, I think I'll go back and sit in it to see how it feels. Mm-mm. Like many times we might say, well, you know, I'm not going to drink, but I'm just going down there and sit on that bar stool. I ain't going to drink, though. I'm just going to sit there. Oh, no. Then I've started lying to myself already, you know? You see, what's on a man's mind, whatever's on your mind is going to come out. And you're thinking, and then you're talking. You know, one time this man walked in the beer garden there, you know, he was sitting already there, you know. See, what's on your mind, it's going to come out that thinking. See, now I got to keep this thing up here straight. Got to keep exercising and trying to exercise good thinking. Good judgment, but talking to you. And you talking to me and me listening. This man was sitting there one time, you know, and he's watching this woman. She wasn't look too bad, you know. So he sat there, you know, he had a big mug of beer in front of him. And I don't tell this joke on Sunday, only on Friday and Saturday. And as he sat there with this mug of beer and the lady walked past him, and, you know, she looked pretty fair. And the bar owner saw him watching this woman, and he said, I know what you got on your mind, buddy, but you can forget it. So she belongs to me. He said, I ain't think about that woman. She ain't on my mind. Here, give me another piece of beer. And, so you see, Well, I don't tell that joke on Saturday and Sunday. On Sunday, no. See. But you see, whatever is on your mind is going to come out in your actions. So I must persist in that muscle of preservation. Yeah. All right. What are some of the things that help me to keep my thinking straight? My communication with God as I understand him, you know. Get up in the morning and look in that little book there and read that little meditation there and all those little things, you know. It seems to fall in place. And you know one thing? If I get up in the morning and I do that little reading, you know, I don't think about so much as, well, you know, so-and-so tried to cut me down last night. So-and-so did this to me. That book's going to tell me something in there, you know. I just let that slip off of my mind, and I don't have to pay too much attention to that one way or the other thing. But the main thing of it is, the inventory that I must take is not what people have done to me, but what am I trying to do for people? Most of all, how am I reacting to a situation? How did I react to these situations before? And then, you know, he realized that he had to use that muscle of gratitude. Thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. offspring only through the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. The muscle of gratitude. To be grateful. And to give thanks unto whom thanks is due. No more I did this, I did that. No more all my deifying and no glorifying. That is always I did this and I did that. You know, sometimes we're so afraid that people won't see what we do. You know? Sometimes we're so afraid that we won't be recognized to get in trouble. It's like, you know, one time Frog wanted to go down south. It was getting cold where he lived. And, well, he did. And so he saw two geese that were flying, getting ready to fly down south. And he said, would you all take me with you? And they said, well, we would love to, but Frog, you don't have any wings, you know. And I ain't talking about that fellow around here named Frog. This is a real Frog. I mean, a toad Frog, wasn't it? And anyway, so the Frog said, well, would you all please take me with you? And so the geese said, well, we don't know how to take you. You don't have any wings. So anyhow, one of the geese said, thought of something. And he said, I tell you what, he says, there's a bean pole over there. You put part of it in your mouth, and I'll put the other end in my mouth, and let the Frog hang in the middle. And so off they went flying to the south with the Frog in the middle on the pole and the two geese holding it in their mouth. So two hunters happened to see him. And, didn't shoot. So two hunters happened to see him, and one of the hunters said, now, isn't that a marvelous doing there? Isn't that a marvelous invention there? And he said, I wonder who thought that up. Well, you know, not a goose. One of the geese thought it up. You know about it. The doggone Frog said, I did. And when he said, I did, naturally, he opened his mouth. He got what he wanted, but he lost what he had. Always remember this. There'll be a many times you'll get what you want, but you lose what you got. Yeah? It's just that simple. Yeah? Gratitude. That, to me, is the most wonderful thing that it is. When one is grateful for what he has and gives back to God the glory. See? But for the grace of God. You don't see that sign around here too much anymore. You don't see it anywhere much more. But for the grace of God. In other words, we are grateful people. You know, I know nowhere else on earth when you meet two alcoholics beating the street, we look at one another and we start laughing to each other. You know, you start laughing, I start laughing, and I don't know. We're not laughing because each other's so ugly or so pretty. We're just laughing, you know, because I'm glad to see you and you're still sober, you know. So we laugh because we're happy about it. Well, yeah, we cry too, you know. One of those kind of things, you know. Especially when you get time to go home, you know, cry about it, you know. One of those kind of things. But gratitude, one of the most beautiful things. You know, it is good to remember to go back where I got help so that I can be of help. You know, the 10 lepers that our divine Lord healed one time, and only one went back to thank him. And he said, I healed 10. Where's the other 9? They forgot. Yeah. See, a sick child stays close to his father. You ever notice how a sick child stays close to his mother and father? Sometimes you and I, we forget to be grateful because little things happen to us. You say, oh, I got sick, this happened or that happened. You know, my friends, that's only the touch of the shepherd's crook. You see the picture of the old shepherd as he sits there. He's been out all day long with his sheep. And as the sheep comes into the fold at night, the old shepherd stands there with his crook. And if he sees that there is something wrong where one of them's eye has been scratched or his skin has been scratched or the wool has been torn, he takes his staff and he touches that shepherd, that sheep. And that sheep falls out of line. And the rest of them go in the fold. And these that have been bruised slightly, then the old shepherd can administer to them. And how many times when some of these little scratches of life touch us. It's only so that we will step out of line so we can get in line again. We need that touch of the shepherd's crook. And sometimes, you know, we forget about a message that we must carry out of gratitude. We have to remember that there's always three people that we're trying to reach. We must remember the little sheep, the new one. Maybe he didn't hear his cry. Maybe he was afraid to cry. And sometimes the new person is afraid to cry. And we don't know what to say to him, so we sit beside of him, you know. Then here is the person that has become rather disgruntled about the whole thing. And he says, you know, I'm plodding along each and every day, but nobody's paying any attention to me. So, well, you start paying attention to somebody else, and then somebody will pay attention to you. And here is the person that says, you know, I don't think I'm going to make it. I really don't. He's in and out, and I don't think I'm going to make it, you know. And you say, well, pray. No, no. He says, I've had my hands up for so long, and I've been praying for so long, and I'm tired. Nothing's happened. Well, you know how it was when Moses was praying, and he went, and his arms, as long as he's held his arms up and he prayed, you know what happened? The battle was on his side, but his arms got tired, and the battle began to go on the side of the enemy. And that is a man or woman like Moses. He had to send out and get two of his warriors to help hold up his hands. So if you're tired of praying and you think you're not going to make it, come back and we'll help you hold up your hands. Say, we'll all pray with you. Say, I don't want to hear that stuff about praying. It's better to be praying than it is land, baby. Right? And then, you know, this youngster had to use the muscle of usefulness. And that is a great muscle. The muscle of usefulness. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of this step, we tried to carry the message of alcoholics and practice principles and all of our things. Usefulness. He had to realize, look, something has been given to me. I must give it back. Useful. You see, a plastic spoon is useful. Mm-hmm. But a silver spoon is not only useful, it is valuable. And that's what our divine Lord is looking for. People that are useful to the point of becoming valuable. And this is this of utmost importance. See, when one becomes useful, he begins to see what I can do for my fellow man. When one becomes useful, he has learned these three things: to admit, to accept, and to surrender. And when one has admitted and accepted and surrendered to this fellowship, something beautiful begins to happen to him. And the beautiful thing that begins to happen to him is that he can stand up. He can get up out of his wheelchair, and any affliction or addiction that he might have, he can throw that aside because he can begin to stand up. And he can walk. And as that book of books tells us, where all of this other beautiful stuff came out of, not only will he stand up and walk and throw down his addiction, he will run and not be weary, and he will walk and not faint. God, thank you.
Thank you so much, Holly. That was absolutely beautiful. We have a gift up here on the dais for you, and I would like for you to come up and make the choice of the color that you would like. And one of the members of our fellowship did these gifts for us, and every stitch that is on here has been put in there with a great deal of love and in order to share with our speakers. for those of you who do not know what the gift is, it says, Mrs. Bluff City, 1979, and it says, what we are is God's gift to us. What we become is our gift to God. Isn't that nice? And if I could give a gift to every one of you tonight, my gift would be a photograph of each of your faces as you were watching Holly talk. It was very, very wonderful to look out there and see what was happening to you while you were listening to her. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this or not. I don't have my glasses with me. Arlie, would you mind coming? Oh, wonderful. Who can see that would read the...
Come up here and read that, will you?
This little bitty print and I don't get along. The older... Would you all stand and join with me in the Lord's Prayer, please? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.